Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, if you're listening, we're glad you found us. Welcome aboard another edition of More Outdoors. Two more hours to go. In our second hour, we're going to be joined by a couple of our Outdoor Writer Association fellow members, Wendy Billiard, who is the president of the Louisiana Outdoor Writers Association, and Keith Lusher, the host of the North Shore Fishing Report, which is also a monthly show that airs for sometimes 2 hours, an hour. And he has a website of the same name and concentrates on the fishing information and some hunting that takes place on the north shore of Lake Pontchartrain. This morning in the 8 to 9 o'clock hour, we're going to discuss what has been the subject of my outdoor opinion poll on the webpage at DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com. Preliminary report indicating that our speckled trout population has been for years and currently overfished. Again, it was a preliminary report. It's going to take, from my best understanding, maybe a couple of months to get all the data in. And once that is done, if regulation changes are deemed necessary, we're going to ask you, what would you prefer as changes to restore that population to a safe level? And I've got probably about eight different choices there, and we'll run those down for you in the 8 o'clock hour. And if you'd like to text us and give us your opinion on it, you can do that at 870-870. Phone lines also open this hour at 504-260-6368. If you've got a question, comment, we'd love to hear from you. Just give us a call and tell us what's on your mind this morning. We're also asking you to text in a couple of things. What is the most dangerous spot that you know of for boating? And what is the one item at the French Quarter Fest this weekend that you really should not walk by? And there's so many choices there, you can't possibly eat everything. So you got to narrow it down to make a hit list. And we got some good ones came in. Again, that text board is 870-870. Something else I wanted to mention, Martha. On my last fishing piece on Fishing Game and the Outdoors Report, I mentioned Victoria's Secret's Amber Romance as a gnat repellent. And this thing really took off a life of its own. People were going all over to Victoria's Secret looking for it, and some of the responses from the employees, they said, we got guys coming here and leave out of here with this stuff by the case.
That's hilarious.
And I think WWL-TV is actually going to do a Verify story to find out if it really is effective. And, you know, the shame of it is they really don't market that as an insect repellent.
Well, that's not really their business. So.
Well, no, but as long as it's got an application for that, you'd think they would take advantage of it.
I mean, there's some definitely creative possibilities for advertising, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, if you've got a better than Amber Romance gnat repellent, or what do you use? Because this is the time of the year. You get days, of course, the wind today, they can't hang with this wind, but you get a still day. And a lot of people think when it's cold, you don't get bothered by gnats. Those suckers just show up.
Down in Venice, we get them right at sunset. Right at dusk is when they get really bad. So that always motivates me to wash the boat faster. And the thing is, we have to dry the boat. Because it's a white boat, I think that attracts them more. But if you don't dry your boats, overnight the bugs will stick, and they leave kind of this orangish residue, and you really got to keep your boat dry to be able to rinse them off, or else they start drying and sticking to it. So if you wash your boat, get one of those dry chamois and run it over the boat, because that'll really help deal with, because there's going to be bugs on them the next day. You're just, you know, you can't expect it to be clean the next morning, but it definitely helps eliminate your workload the next day.
Well, Venice being on the river with a lot of fresh water, not quite as bad. Hopedale is the absolute worst.
Oh, yeah,
they can be bad. Well, let me tell you this. What, from your standpoint, what is the best cleaning product for boats? What do you use?
Well, we have a little more strict boat washing routine than many in Venice, but when you have a nice boat, you want to take care of it. So we use two products. You know, the older boats, sometimes people just use bleach and, you know, they throw it in a bucket and scrub their boat down. But when you've got a ceramic coat or anything on a white boat that's not a metal boat, you got to really take care of it. So we use Salt Away, which is a concentration, and we use that with an attachment on the hose, and we salt away everything on the boat, the tackle, the boat, you know, the outside of the boat, and just let that soak for 5 minutes or so. And it really helps, especially with your rods and reels, because a lot of guys down there just leave their tackle on their boats. And that can really be subject to salt water if you don't take care of them. A lot of people, you know, rinse their tackle, but the salt away does help if you've got some, you know, nicer reels you want to take care of. So I don't rinse that off because that just takes too much time. I leave the salt away on, and then I start scrubbing the boat, and I use what is it? It's a I'm blanking right now. Woody wax soap. It's a blue bottle. It's about $40 for a big gallon jug, and we go through that probably once a month. But woody wax soap is awesome. It smells amazing, and it bubbles really good. So that's what we use.
Have you heard of a product called Booyah? There's a friend of mine who came up with that, and he told me, and this was a couple of years ago, he said that very soon, meaning, you know, well, the government doesn't move soon or anything, but that the EPA was cracking down on detergents being discharged at boat washes and in marinas, and they were going to require that it be an EPA-approved product that was used, and he was kind of jumping the gun and getting ahead of the game and devised this product that would meet those regulations.
I know a lot of the inshore guys use them. We go through a lot of boat wash, so unless they sell a really big jug of it, you know, we like our what we use. But, yeah, I think that's important to pay attention to, and I'm not sure of the EPA guidelines with what we use, but I know it keeps the boat clean.
Yeah, well, his I think, gallons, I don't think he had anything any bigger than the gallon, although he might be able to. He's got the chemical plant is located right here in Harahan, so he can kind of mess with things. In fact, he's the one that bottles my gun solvent, the gun cleaner that I have out, the Dead Eye Dons, which, you know, I think we made a mistake in making it too big of a bottle.
Yeah.
You just don't go through that stuff
that
often. Right. It lasts you for so long, you know?
I just had to go online and order a bore for my 28-gauge because everything we have in our house for bigger guns won't go down the barrel. But somebody pointed out to me, we were out at Covey Rise on Friday, and said, you need to clean your gun. I said, yeah, you're right. It hasn't been cleaned in about 400 rounds. So
tell us about the offshore fishing. This season compared to last year or years past, what's different about it? What's good about it? What's bad about it? How's it been?
It's been better this season than last season in terms of tuna. The wahoo have been better this year also, but compared to still maybe 3 years ago, it's still down. The wahoo did come in a little later this year, and they were really big, and a lot of people got on them. The bite still hasn't been really easy. The swordfish bite has been off the charts. A lot of people have been targeting swordfish, which makes me a little nervous. I mean, you can boat four legally, but I don't think anyone needs four swordfish. There's so much meat produced on those fish. I really wouldn't want to kill one less than 100 pounds. I mean, anything under that to me is kind of a pup, seeing how big they do get. I'm optimistic that summer's going to be good. It's about to be true. We're kind of in an awkward time right now where live bait's not really readily available to everybody. It's hard to find. You might spend a lot of time looking for live bait. But I did notice going out, we went out to the Delta House rigs, which is a good 60 miles offshore in Blue Water a few weeks ago, and there were maybe four or five boats out there, and four of us were using cut bait and red meat, and the people that came out there with live bait were just decimating us. I mean, they found an area that they could catch live bait. We're not talking, you know, this is not stuff you can go buy. You got to go catch it yourself, and that's a lot more challenging than going to the tackle shop and getting the shrimp out of the bubbler. So live bait is king right now, but again, it's hard to find. And the reason it is so popular right now is because live bait is offshore. It's very hard to catch bait offshore in deep, deep water. You can't really throw a cast net when it's so deep and they're moving so quickly, but if you can sabiki up some bait, you know, you're not going to get the multitudes you will when the pogies come in, but live bait is definitely king right now. And that's why it makes it so challenging, because if there's red meat in the water, dead pogies in the water, and live bait swimming around, they're going to go for live bait first.
You mentioned releasing the swordfish. You know, I kind of use as a rule of thumb, if I want to release fish, you know, bass or whatever, if I see blood running out the gills, they're pretty much done. I've heard biologists say that you may as well keep that
well,
fish.
We don't
what
usually
do you use as a rule of thumb on a fish that's so seriously wore out or damaged that its chances of survival are not worth putting
it back? Swordfish are remarkably resilient fish. They can swim from the depths up to the top and have no impact from pressure. The length of the fight is pretty, you know, minimal in their survival. What really matters is how they're hooked and if they're gut hooked or tail wrapped, or they just look really bad, or they swallow the bait and you can't get it out of their throat because you're using a big J hook with them. But for the most part, swordfish are usually fairly easy to release, and they're not like marlin in the sense that you have to swim them by the boat and kind of revive them. they seem to take off pretty well on their own. So I'm a little skeptical when I see small fish come in and people said, well, they it's because they were, you know, they were gut hooked or gill hooked. But overall, they're pretty resilient fish, and they're remarkably beautiful fish.
Well, the other saltwater offshore fish, I guess by size you have to release them. But there's not much catch and release goes on a legal size fish when it comes to tuna. Wahoo, they pretty much go in the box.
Oh, they're going in the box. Wahoo have there's no limits on wahoo, and they breed a lot. They're kind of like mahi. So if the day they start limiting us on wahoo is the day I'm really going to be concerned for offshore fishing. I'm already worried about it as is with the limits, but people are starting to limit out on the schoolies, the smaller tunas this time of year. They're, you know, the 30, 40 pounders. So it's good to see that people are starting to catch those. And a responsible fisherman, I mean, you can keep up to 3 per person, but when you got 6 people, 18 tuna is a lot of meat to take home. I mean, people are shocked when they catch 2 big fish and you cut it up and they see how much meat's on the table. It kind of blows their mind.
Well, after this break, when we come back, I want to talk about what's next seasonal-wise for offshore fishing and maybe some advice. You know, if you know any of these fishermen that are really good, I know a couple of them that are really good at catching these exotics. There's a lot of fish out there that are underutilized because simply don't know about them.
I don't even know if I want to talk about that.
Uh-oh. Well, we'll try to get it out of you. Yeah. We'll be right back. Don Dubuque, Martha Spencer. It's More Outdoors. Call us at 504-260-6368 or shoot us a text message at 870-870. We're back right after this.
We were talking previously about Victoria's Secret Amber Romance, which is widely known in the fishing community as being the best gnat preventative. Someone just texts in, if Victoria's Secret is embarking on an ad campaign for Amber Romance, sign me up to see that. They could really cash in on some creative advertising out there. So Victoria's Secret, you're missing out if you're not jumping on the ball with the Amber Romance. And I'm thinking at this point, at least in Louisiana, people are pretty used to seeing men coming in and buying it, especially if they're buying it in the multitudes that they are. They're wondering, why do you need all that? They probably know right now. All right, we've got an email here. It's the update of the 2019 April Council update on the Gulf of Mexico fishery, and we're talking about red snapper. So the council took final action on reef fish, and here's what the numbers basically came out to. These values are as follows. Each state will be allocated a portion of the recreational quota for the 2018-2019 exempted fishing permit application. So here's where they're going to be, just how it's going to be distributed. Alabama gets 26.2%. Florida gets 44.8%, and they are vastly ahead of everybody else. 19% for Louisiana, 3.5% Mississippi, and 6.2% for Texas. And that's interesting because I think this is a little bit different than the commercial numbers. I think Texas fared a little bit better with the commercial numbers, but this is, or the is for higher recreational, but this is for private recreational red snapper. So Louisiana's kind of right in the middle at 19.12%, and the council is elected to delegate authority for establishing or modifying the bag limit minimum size within 14 to 18 inches and a maximum size limit. I don't think people are going to like that too much. You tell them you can't catch a 30-pound snapper and keep it. I don't know. That's not going to sit too well. So that's under discussion. But in Venice, I think Venice and Alabama, even though Alabama doesn't have the allocations for the numbers, I would say the biggest red snapper I see come out of there. And even Florida Panhandle, some really big red snapper. But Venice, just the oil rigs, they're dinosaurs over there.
So. How do you think about that breakdown? You think that's fair?
No, I don't. I think Louisiana needs a bigger cut. Florida, I think they're talking about, you know, because the state bodies different bodies of water and there's more people fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama has good numbers, and I guess maybe that's because they have more rig structure than Mississippi. Is that why? I mean, the thing that's confusing is Mississippi and Alabama numbers are so greatly different, and I'm wondering why that is. Is it more anglers? Is it more structure? Is it they're just getting more reports of fish being caught out of Alabama? Is there just not a lot of people going out of Mississippi? So that's what's curious.
That.
And Texas, too. They get huge snapper over there, and they only get 6.2. So
I'm wondering if it could be either or. I mean, there's a lot more. It's a big industry in Alabama. Red snapper is huge over there. Not so in Mississippi. Now, is it because they just don't fish for them there or because there's better fishing in Alabama waters? I don't know.
Maybe you have to go further out in Mississippi to find them. And
could
there's
be.
Just not as many people targeting them. But I'll tell you what, there's no shortage. You can catch them in state waters all day in Louisiana.
So until that opens, what else is out there that people could catch besides the wahoo, the tuna? Just typical rig fishing. You got lemon fish, but
they're,
takes a
really
while.
Yeah, they're not really here yet. A couple cobia have been caught, but you've got mangrove snapper. I mean, Louisiana. When tuna fishing got really bad last year, a lot of the charters turned to mangrove as their, you know, their insurance policy. And it's a very different type of fishing than tuna fishing, but it did spare a lot of empty boats. So I saw more boats come in with mangrove than I've ever seen. And most people don't really want to go and take the time to mangrove fish, but that's what they were cashing in on. They've got really high limits, 10 per person. So they were checking in, coming in with 30, 40 mangroves, which makes me nervous. I'm thinking, why do we need all that meat? So I'm hoping we didn't deplete the mangrove sources too bad last season because the tuna bite was bad. You can catch sheephead. Mm-hmm. You can catch lane snapper. You can catch beeliners. Beeliners have a really high limit, too. So if you can find
them. So how do you identify those from small red snapper?
The beeliners are round. Their body from top to bottom is not as high. They're smaller.
They're more elongated, but they're
more bullet-shaped, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a different color. They don't have the scale structure. They're pretty easily discernible between a red snapper. And they're going to have a little darker color, too. So you don't really find a ton of small red snapper around here, and a small red snapper is more along the size of a beeliner. A big beeliner might be 4 or 5 pounds at the most.
And triggerfish, which I remember once as being so plentiful, you could catch all you want. Now,
here's
not
my
so much.
Theory on triggerfish. You can still catch them for the next month, and then they close. And they're getting triggerfish and amberjack are being very heavily policed right now, which is frustrating because my theory is the snapper are eating the triggerfish eggs. And I think that the overpopulation of snapper is hurting our triggerfish species. And I think we need to be a little more lax on the red snapper in order to revive other species. Triggerfish are really, really tasty fish, and they're a rig species. They're usually fairly shallow. But, yeah, I mean, in the past 2 years, we really haven't even been able to catch them.
May 11th is when it closes.
Yep.
So that's coming up real soon. What, you have a favorite triggerfish recipe or one that...
Not really. I just cook them, you know, like I would a snapper. It's similar meat. Triggerfish, you got to be really careful dehooking them. They're mean fish.
Mm-hmm.
They'll bite you.
Oh, will they?
They're like the chihuahua of fish.
I had one bit me. Got on that skin between your thumb and your forefinger.
Yeah.
He had me.
I had a friend get bit in the stomach, and he had a welt for months after that. They're mean.
Yes, they are. All right. Well, we got a comment. If Victoria's Secret is embarking on an ad campaign.
Oh,
did you mention
yep.
it? I didn't see it. Okay, signing me up to see that. Yeah, I guess you wouldn't be the only one.
I think they'd have some pretty good creative advertising on there.
Yes, they could. There's a great potential for Amber Romance, no doubt. I got a text in this week, a Johnny come lately, I guess, on the Cajun invasion to Alaska. I put him in touch with Ralph Crystal. I don't know if there's any openings still going on, but that's not that far off what's coming around. And you made your first one last year. I've been on it. This will be like my 15th year doing this. What would you tell people about the trip? Because most people the first time, they want to get a taste of everything. But some things you have preference over, some you don't. Your favorite type of fishing in Alaska?
I would say for the folks who are on the fence about going that maybe aren't crazy about fishing, but somebody that wants to go with them who's a little more enthusiastic, to take that plunge and go because it's one of those places. It's not like going out and, you know, right outside the city. It's a lot more scenic. Nothing in Alaska is anything short of breathtaking. So whatever trip or excursion you go on, if you are a photographer or a bird watcher or just a nature lover, and maybe you're not wild about the fishing, go anyway because you're still going to see things you never did, and maybe you'll be inclined to pick up the rod and catch a few fish. So I think there's something in it for everybody, and you can kind of cater your trip to more of what you like to do, whether that's inshore or river trips, something a little more low-key. Everybody should do the flyout. Absolutely. That's the most breathtaking views. Or if you're a little more adventurous and you want to head on the offshore trips. Disclaimer with the offshore trips, prepare for a very long day.
Yeah.
It's like a 16-hour day at least, and then you're driving a lot because Alaska is so big, nothing's really in your backyard. So prepare for early mornings and hitting it hard every day.
You know, one of the really nice things about the Cajun invasion, and you would really appreciate that, you don't have to clean any fish.
No.
They clean all the fish for you.
They clean vacuum seal, and flash freeze. Everything, you don't have to touch the fish till you cook it again, which is great. I appreciated that for sure.
Unless you're back there, well, actually, those boys would clean it for you. But, you know, there's some fishing right behind the lodge there if you want to go back there and do the lining for the red salmon. And then you can just carry them right up over the hill and put them in there and clean them up yourself if you prefer to do that.
I snuck down behind the lodge one morning right at sunrise. I think it was right after we did our radio broadcast because it was right around sunrise when we finished. And the sunrise was unlike any I'd ever seen on the river there. It was just absolutely breathtaking. Kind of a surreal moment sitting out there. And it's such a big state, too. You never feel like you're congested or, like, bumper to bumper. The only time you might ever feel a little claustrophobic is on a boat when you've got eight people on it. But other than that, you feel like you kind of own the place.
Really? Great place. And if you want more information, go on my website and look under Cajun Invasion. We've got a banner right there, and it kind of breaks down everything that's included, the cost, and what you get. I don't know how many openings, if any, that Ralph Crystal has, but if you want to take a shot and at this late stage, you can. I also got some information in about leaving orphaned wildlife alone while the parents are hunting and foraging for den relocation or out feeding. A lot of people under the mistaken impression, and I think the one that gets found the most are what they think is an abandoned fawn. They'll be out in the woods, and they'll come across, and they're so cute. I mean, they are just
really
beautiful.
Cute.
They're the size of like a little tiny puppy, and they got the spots and the doe eyes, and people feel sorry for them and said, oh, this thing is not going to have a chance. I got to bring it home and bottle feed it. Don't do it. It's not the right thing to do. By any means, you can be ticketed for that. But it's normal for the mother to go off and forage and browse and then come back. She knows where that baby was. And if, you know, you go in there and you're kind of interfering with nature.
It's not like humans. Their babies can survive for a few hours by themselves.
That's right. And probably at one time humans could too, but not anymore.
Right.
All right, we'll come back after this break. More of More Outdoors. I'm also going to run down those choices that we have for you on the webpage. If you think we need to take some more stringent action, and a lot of people do, on our speckled trout population, how would you like to go about doing it? What would you like to see? Back to talk about that right after this pause. You're listening to More Outdoors, WWL 105.3 HD2, and we live stream at DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com. All right, please text us if you care to, 870-870, or we can take your telephone call at 504-260-6368. I still would like to get some more suggestions. We're headed over to the French Quarter Fest. We'll be on the air from noon to 3, and we'll get a chance to sample some of the wonderful cuisine there. And if you've been over there, you've been there in years past, what is the one dish that we should not pass up? You can just shoot us a text at 870-870. All right, if you want to get some ideas of what we may be faced with in order to restore the Louisiana speckled trout population, if, in fact, this is not definite, but the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, they are bound by law to do a stock assessment every few years. The stock assessment that they preliminarily did this year indicated that the population has been for years, several years, and currently is overfished. That if that is found to be the case, then they'll have to recommend some changes. I'm hoping they will do what Alabama is considering. Alabama is going to put it out to their fishermen and get their input on what they would like to see. Sometimes Louisiana does that on issues. sometimes they just make a decision on their own. Here are the options, and you can find this on the Outdoor Opinion Poll on my website. Well, how do you feel about reducing the daily 25 fish per person limit to between 10 or 15? And that's the one I hear the most commonly. Right now, 70% of the respondents believe that that's the way it would go if it's necessary. The ones that would reduce it to less than 10, and there is a possibility that that may be the recommendation, zero. And not surprising. Nobody wants to go to less than 10
There's
fish.
One you didn't include, though, that I would actually be for.
What's that?
Well, I guess maybe that's the next. Maybe it is
increasing the minimum size.
Well, increasing the minimum size and dropping,
and the lowering limit. No, I didn't put the combination in there, but that could be a possibility. But 15% said increase the minimum size. Slot limit similar to what we have on redfish, you know, where you've got a minimum size set and then a maximum size where you can keep one for your trophy. You know, if you catch a big 25-inch trout or whatever size they would decide, that's not real popular either. That's at 5%. Closing the season, now that's not real popular either. 5% there. And the least popular is nobody wants to get shut out of fishing. Limit the number of licenses. That's 0%. And what about if you just don't want to change? I don't care if there's a shortage.
I'm
I don't care if there's
an
abundance.
That one's not higher, actually.
5% say, I don't care. I'm not giving up my... Well, the argument I've heard for the 25 is, no, I don't always catch 25. But when they're biting and I get into them, I want to be able to get them at that time.
Well, you can catch them. Just have to put them back.
Well, that was not the whole motive there.
There must be really good sales in freezer storage in Louisiana. I mean, whoever sells deep freezers must do really well, because I know people are loading them up.
Yes, and not just with fish, too. A lot of stuff. All right, we got a text in. Guess who it is, Martha?
Ray. Oh, he's a little late this morning.
Yeah, where you been, Ray? He's in Lacombe. Oh, he's going to be on the Cajun Invasion again. He's a repeat offender. He's going to be there the first week that we're there. So he'll be there when we arrive.
And there's five of them going. So we will not be on the
five of them.
So their first trip is the Seward trip, so we will not be in Seward with them. But at least they'll give us a good preview of what's out there.
Yeah. Well, I hope they have some kind of a celebration waiting for us when we get there, you know, a welcome party or something. All right,
Ray. Oh, here's a text. Was the Woody boat soap you were speaking of the Ultra Pine Wash and Wax boat soap? Yes, I think that is it. It's a blue bottle, so I'm going to double check that real quick and let you know. But I think that is what I was referring to. Woody, let's see.
Yep. He also, Ray said we could go on the halibut trip maybe. Now, you're going to do, how many offshore trips are you going to do?
At least two.
At least two, yeah. Well, that comes along with the normal package.
I'd like to do maybe three.
Well, I'm sure you could. But you might have to give up the glacier tour. I don't know if you want to do that.
We'll figure it out.
Yep. Well, you got a special reason to go to Alaska, too. Hopefully we can contact and hook up with your twin and your new nephew.
Yeah, my nephew is still in the hospital. He was born at 22 weeks, 3 days. He's in Alaska in Anchorage. And I have a feeling he's going to be out of the hospital before we get there. But I don't necessarily know if he'll be back to Kodiak. And they are moving late summer, so I think they'll be in Alaska, whether they're in Kodiak or Anchorage. I'm hoping they're in Anchorage so we can pop over to the hospital and see them. But, it'd be great news if he's out of the hospital as well.
All right. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to change our thoughts right now. In the 8 to 9 o'clock hour, Keith Lusher and Wendy Billy are going to join us. We're going to have an in-depth discussion about it, hear their input, what they're hearing from fishermen, their personal thoughts and views on it, and also yours, too. But turkey hunting. It's turkey season right now. It's in. I got out and had a great trip, and if you've been listening to me for any length of time, you know I'm not real happy with the turkey management program here in the state of Louisiana, and hopefully that will change. The problem seems to be the biologists that head up our turkey program say they contend that we have a very serious shortage of turkeys in Louisiana. How do they know that? I'm in the process of requesting their data to find out how they determine that, because unlike Alabama, which their turkey study leader went out and recruited 400 Alabama turkey hunters to help them as volunteers to do poult counts, which is when you find, after the nesting season, you find the hen, you count how many poults she's got. That gives you an estimate on the breeding success for that season and what you might look forward to next year. They do gobbles. They listen for gobbles in the spring. And they do some actually hands-on physical observations. And if you could get 400 people to volunteer to work in any business, that business is going to be a whole lot more efficient than without them. Louisiana has never suggested that. I feel personally that they neglect their users tremendously. They do not offer you options. What they did in order to rectify what they perceived as a population problem was to move the season dates back. And what that does is it gives you less of the gobbling period. I think we have already missed it.
Well, it's interesting you say we've already missed it, because the two that you two shot, you did not hear.
And the three that came in, not one of those birds was gobbling. And so, you know, that would be, that's a small sample size, but I really got to believe that that's part of the problem. And if they're using the tag reportings to estimate the population, not good science, not good science. Because I know people are not doing their due diligence with these tags. And not only is it law that you have to put the tag on the bird immediately, you've got to phone it in or go online within 72 hours and report it. And I know Louisiana hunters. I've been around them way too long, and they're going to take the easy route, and they're not going to bother to do it. Throw it in the back of the truck, clean it at the camp, and keep that tag in case I get another one.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to come up with a better inventory of what we have. I think that's one problem, because with speckled trout, I think it's two different situations. I think the fishermen have noticed. You hear fishermen saying, oh, it's not like it used to be, and we're not catching the big fish, and we're not limiting out as much. And the science is kind of agreeing with that.
Right.
Turkeys,
but
totally
I also think,
different.
And there's a lot more people speckled trout fishing than there are turkey hunting.
Well, there is. But I think the difference is still the same, that the people who are out there are seeing lots of birds on their deer leases, and more than ever they can do this because of trail cameras.
Oh, yeah, they're
everywhere.
They've
got feeders, and they're seeing these turkeys, and that does not match up with what the biologist is saying.
That's
so
right.
Somebody's wrong. Either mm-hmm. the hunters are wrong or the biologists are wrong. And I think they just need to maybe come together, and hopefully they would ask the turkey hunters, like Alabama has done, to voluntarily report the information that they're seeing. Anyway, we're going to take a break. We come back. We're going to hear from the beady-eyed bird. I had some people wanted to hear that again. I'm tired of hearing it all these years. He's been taunting me on the air, and every year I kill turkeys, but he's not the one. He's been escaping me. You'll hear from him right after this. You're listening to More Outdoors on WWL 105.3 FM HD2. Here he is, the beady-eyed bird, my arch enemy. He's been tormenting me for years. I've been killing his brothers and his relatives, but I can't catch up with him. Hopefully, maybe this will be the year. When are you going to go turkey hunting, Martha? You done killed everything else, caught everything else in Louisiana, but not the turkey yet, huh?
I don't have a place to go that's close, number one. My closest turkey lease is 2.5 hours away, but I've just been so busy. I mean, I can only spread yourself so many places.
You got to make time for turkey hunting.
There's
nothing
like it. I got to make time for vacation,
like
which is next week.
Toby gets it. You know, Toby's one of our regulars. He's up in Angie. He's out there hunting turkeys this morning with Dalton. It's a young guy that he takes out there. Dalton killed his first turkey last year, and now he's taking him again. But this trip got ruined today. He sent me a picture of a bunch of cows. Cows moved into pieces. I'm fixing to eat ribeye instead of turkey. But we were having a discussion last week. He was successful. He killed one. I think he's tagged out in Louisiana. He's killed him in Mississippi. He travels to Kentucky. He's a very ardent turkey hunter. And we were discussing turkey hunting, and he says it's such a rush, you know, and it really is. My buddy Jerry Cross, Jerry's hunted all his life, probably been hunting 50 years. And last week, when he had his cell phone on the bird that approached me, and when I pulled the trigger and killed that bird, I thought I was going to have to call 911. His heart was racing. He was all excited.
When you killed one?
When I killed it, and he just had the phone on it. And then when his came in, we had two of them coming in, and I was working the phone camera. And I'm centered on the bird that's in plain view closest to it. And I said, go ahead and kill him.
And he shot the other one.
He gets a little jumpy.
He let you shoot first on his lease. That
he
was
did.
Very nice.
And I told him, when the bird started coming, I said, you want him? And he says, no, you get him. I said, oh. He didn't have to tell me twice.
Yeah, really.
But
you probably didn't finish the sentence before you were shooting at him.
When you get a turkey coming in to your call, and it's got its head moving and it's looking for you, it really is. The hair will stand up on the back of your neck. If it doesn't, you better check your pulse. All right, here's a text coming in from Baton Rouge. Says there's a lot going here. I think super cold weather in 17 with constant northwest wind marsh blowouts in 17 and 18 has reduced the catches. With all that said, I think 15, 14-inch trout is a nice mess of fish. So he was kind of going along the line you said, Martha, that maybe a combination of size and quantity might be in order.
Well, it's going to be challenging to get 15, 14-inch trout, too. I mean, sometimes it's tough to get them that big, you know? A lot of throwbacks in the mix.
Well, that means more of them stay in,
that's
and
right.
That is supposedly the solution to bringing the speckled trout back. There was some cold weather in 17. We had some freezes.
Oh, yeah.
There weren't a lot of reported fish kills. That doesn't mean they didn't happen.
That's true.
And I'm not so sure that extremely cold weather doesn't influence the spawning anyway, you know, just the spawning itself.
Well, we have Wendy and Keith here, so let's save the more trout talk for the next hour, but let's talk quickly about our trip to Kaplan the other day.
Cajun lures. Boy, that was a kick, you know? Yeah, that was fun.
I have to tell you, people that make lures have a passion for it,
mm-hmm.
because you have to have a passion to be doing molds and doing this day in and day out. And a lot of these guys are their own sales representative, their own marketing manager. They work from their house. And it's just, they start from humble beginnings. And, I mean, look, same with Deadly Dudley. That's how he really became.
And Zach Dubois, the guy that has Cajun. I saw a young Deadly Dudley in him. Same kind of passion.
So we went out there to his home in Kaplan and went into his little science lab, I guess you could call it. If you're into chemistry and that sort of thing, you definitely like making lures. It's a lot of fun. And I mentioned to him it'd be a really great extracurricular for, you know, the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts.
What a great school project.
Absolutely.
You know? Science project.
And we came up with two of our own lures. He had probably, I had a hard time coming up with something he didn't already have. It seemed, you know, that everything I liked, I looked at his wallet, lures, and there it is. But he did say that one of the hardest parts is coming up with a catchy name, because you can't just call something the chartreuse and black crawfish, because that doesn't sound as good when you're talking about it on a trophy stand. So it's got to have some catchy Cajun name, and the name Cajun Lures automatically kind of tells people where he's from. So he said he had the jambalaya, he had boudin, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and what was the croaker one? The Couillon
Croaker. Mm-hmm.
You know, as he said, and he's right, there's been so many lures produced over so many years, it is very difficult to come up with something totally new and revolutionary. But, as he also said, the combination of colors is endless.
It doesn't mean they're all going to work, but you can keep trying, keep trying, keep trying. And he also was tickled when he had a teenager, so he's, 26 years old. He's young in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But he had an 18-year-old come up to him, and when he introduced himself, he goes, "You're Zach Dubois?" He's like, "Oh, I use your lures all the time. Can I?" And he's like, "Can I get your autograph?" And he's like, "What?" So he is making a name for himself, and he said on his website that he's sold to every state in the lower 48.
Well, is your Mad Martha,
Mardi Gras Mad Martha,
is it available for site, and where can people see it?
I don't know. Oh, it's for site,
I know you
have
it fast Facebook.
It's on, I put your lure just this morning on our Instagram page. I'll put mine up later,
okay.
But you can check it
out.
Well,
describe it.
So mine is a June bug, which I haven't really ever really used a lot of, but I didn't want to be the same. I didn't want to do a crawfish like Don's because it just had to be different. So I picked the June bug because it kind of looked appetizing, and put a purple color with some green flecks in it. Two different color greens. It definitely it sparkles, for us for sure. Whether something wants to eat it, it might sparkle too much. It might just blow their minds. But you went for a little more traditional.
Yeah, I went, the color, black and chartreuse, whether it's saltwater or freshwater, that's always been a favorite color of mine. And I attribute that to the colors of the catalpa worm.
Mm-hmm.
There's a catalpa worm that grows on, well, doesn't grow, it lives on trees, or the catalpa tree. And in the springtime, about this time of the year, the caterpillars come out. And if you can get a hold of those little rascals and put them on a hook, you are going to catch white perch and brim and panfish, bass, catfish. Every fish eats them. Now, I know there's no catalpa worms in saltwater, but redfish love a blackened chartreuse. And rather than just have the little tips of chartreuse like you see on a paddle tail and a lot of, I had the whole claws done. And it was a very unique way he poured the plastic into the mold. He made an entire, boy, this building, what's going on? Anyway, he made an entire chartreuse crawfish, and then he went back with a blade and cut the claws off.
He did say that yours
and
were
poured
very,
the other one. They're work intensive, labor intensive.
Very custom.
But I'm waiting to see which one's going to produce more fish. We tried them in a pond, but wind
it
was blowing.
So
nobody got
day.
A bite.
No,
you know, and he was fishing there with some different lures. So I still have confidence and hope that the two lures will produce. Mine is called the Dandy Donnie, which is not to be confused with the Dandy Don. There's also one of Dudley's baits was named with it, but it hadn't worked out real well. It's not one of the common ones that you hear, you know.
Yeah.
We got to come up with one for Keith, the Killer Keith, huh? Get him to design a lure, and then Wendy. What would be a good name for the...
I'll just be Wild.
The Wild Wendy. Yeah, that would be it. Design that with some crazy colors and stuff. Anyway, Custom Lures, you can find him on Facebook. Didn't he say Cajun his website, Lures. Cajun Lures, didn't he say his website's still under construction or being redone or something?
I don't recall. But he's easy to find. He's on social media. Facebook, you can find him and contact him.
A little harder to find in person if you're going to go look for him. But his baits are pretty, there's a lot of retailers that carry those.
He was really impressive to me, being so young and having such a good business-minded mentality.
He really did.
His little shop had everything he needed. It was humble, but it was effective, and everything he did in there was kind of well thought out. So whether, you know, the little box he took his pictures in, and everything was put together well. So.
And a homegrown boy went to UL. What did he take? Design engineering?
Yeah. It was an arts degree. Designed boats for a while, and then the business went downhill in business and ended up having some layoffs. So there he was, newly married and getting laid off, but fortunately he had already started the lure industry and kind of saw himself pointing that way anyway. So it was kind of the natural progression for him.
Very tough business, fishing lure
extremely.
Business.
Extremely.
Competitive.
You have to really want it.
Yeah. But if you just want to, you know, appeal to your vanity and get your name put on a bait and have your own personal bait, he'll do it for you.
He did say that he's in the process of getting a bigger machine that holds more molds, because right now he's limited to what he has in his, you know, in the amount of molds. And the way we did the molds is not the way he does it when he mass produces. We kind of did it the more old-fashioned way with hand pouring and in the vise and such. But he has a more effective way that he can produce more. But I think that's... Once he gets that machine, he'll be cranking them out even faster.
You know, I'm wondering if he would have set up a show and he had... Well, it'd be hard to get all the stuff he needed in there, though. But all he had was a microwave, a mold,
Pyrex.
And a bottle of plastic in the coloring, in the glitter. That's kind of it.
I think it'd be doable.
Yeah. Anyway, look for him. Not anytime soon, but you might find the Mardi Gras Mad Martha.
If you contact him enough and say you want them, he might produce them. But right now we've only got 3 bags of each, so they're limited edition.
Yeah, and so, well, we'll put them to the test sooner or later. And I'm thinking that both of them will work either salt water or fresh water.
Yeah, I think so.
The frog, I was leaning towards the frog bait, because that is really a good redfish bass bait for, like, the Delacroix area.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, just decided to go crawfish with it and ended up there. All right, so what's ahead for you next week? When are you leaving to...
Vacation starts Monday.
You just got back. You were bad as Ryan Lambert.
That was not a vacation.
Oh, that's right.
Going home
that
was never a vacation.
A mercy mission or whatever.
Yeah, it was some other stuff, but my first real legit vacation starts Monday. We fly to Puerto Rico.
And what kind of fishing will you be doing there?
We did manage to schedule one fishing trip. We're actually going for a wedding that's next Saturday, but we decided to make a full week out of it. And Tuesday we're going backwater tarpon and snook fishing. So that will be fun. I've never caught a tarpon, so I'm excited.
Get ready. Mm-hmm. That was the most exciting fish of all the fish I've ever caught. I've caught everything but a billfish. But the tarpon, when you have a 150-pound tarpon, jump 12 feet in the air, clear over, higher than your head, looking at a boat, and you're attached to it with a string, there's a little bit of excitement in that.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of smaller ones lately over there. I'm not sure we're going to be able to find the big ones. Hopefully we can. Hopefully we can put in a good word with the guide and be like, hey, you know, we catch a lot of fish. We want the big ones. Maybe some people can't handle them. I don't mind tying up for an hour and a half with a fish.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of want to see that. So.
Well, I'll be pulling out early Tuesday morning, headed for Kansas. This will be a repeat job. We've
giving
been
me
going
grief about taking vacation. He's going to
well,
Kansas.
That's not a vacation. This
oh,
is
it's
work.
A vacation.
This is work. I'm bringing cameras and all
your
that kind of stuff.
Your work is a vacation.
Yeah, right. That's what they all say. Follow me. Stay with me. And we'll see if you keep that same philosophy. All right. Well, when we come back after the CBS Sports Update, Keith Lusher, Wendy Billiott, they're in studio with us. It's going to be another edition of Hunt Fish Talk. We're going to talk more about the speckled trout issue, and I'm going to tell you, this is going to get pretty fiery by the time the information comes out. Some people think it's political that it's not being divulged sooner, because we do have, of all things, a gubernatorial election coming up. Now, I don't know whether that's true. I couldn't swear to it. But sooner or later, the decision will be reached as to whether we need to implement tighter restrictions. And if we do, we're going to get the jump on it. I want to know what most of the fishermen would prefer, if in fact they're even asked. And I don't know that that'll be done. We'll be back to talk more about it. And in the meantime, check out some of the options on my website, DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com. You're going to see Outdoor Opinion Poll. Click it on and then look for the details. And by the way, cast your vote. We're back right after this time out.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.